You are listening to EAA Radio, and this is Magneto Mel.
And Digital Dave.
And we are now sitting here with Vern Rayburn with Eclipse Jet. And
Mystery Eclipse Jet, I understand.
Yeah, definitely. I know we've had you in here in years past, and last time we talked to you last year, everything was up and geared up and running, but you hadn't delivered your first jet yet. Now we've had a year behind us, so how's the year been unfolding?
Well, it's been a challenging year. This time last year, you know, we were just about to receive our provisional type certification, which I think we did on, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday of AirVenture last year, and a big deal with the administrator and Secretary of Transportation and everything else, and that led to our full certification in September, and then we delivered our first aircraft at the end of last year.
Who got that?
A fellow named David Crow, who is...
customer number one.
He was actually customer number one. He stood in line in Phoenix back in May of 2000, and gave us a deposit for $155,000, and he stayed with us that entire time. So,
wow.
You know, you're blessed with customers like that.
Yeah, did he have a special pair of fuzzy dice he was waiting to hang in the window?
Yeah, he was just glad to get the airplane, finally. And then we've been delivering aircraft and building up our production rate since really we had a pause for about 3 months before we delivered the second airplane. And so we're starting to move into rate production now. We're going to be producing... we're pretty much headed towards a rate of 20-plus airplanes a month, and by the end of the year, we should be producing around 40 airplanes per month.
Now, you said you've got an order backlog of 2,500?
It's actually closer to 2,800 now. It was about 2,500 last year here at the show, and now it's up to about 2,800.
Somebody in Cessna is shaking their head going, how did they do that?
Well, they keep saying it never happened, so don't...
Yeah.
They haven't accepted reality yet, but that's normal when you're the leader.
Yeah. Leader slash giant.
Exactly.
And so, and now this year you've got another one on the line, the concept jet,
right?
As opposed to the very light jet.
Well, we still think it's
still a very light jet.
A very light jet. Some people are trying to call these personal jets. You know, a personal jet's a very light jet. I mean, it sort of falls in the category. If it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a VLJ.
Okay.
Well, let's go right into what are the differences.
Well, today, what we did yesterday is we flew in the what we call the concept jet, and there's an important distinction here, which is just like if you go over to the Ford display, you'll see four concept cars. Those are not cars you can go out and buy today, and they're not cars that Ford has committed to produce. And we really lifted a page from the automotive industry, which is kind of atypical for this part of the industry. People tend to announce things, and especially in today's age of computers, it's easy to produce a very realistic-looking rendering and say, see, we have an airplane. So we took a little bit different approach, which is we actually went and built one. And we did it in a kind of a stealth or dark mode. And we're pretty proud of the fact that we built this aircraft from the day we said, let's go try to build an airplane. And first flight was 200 days, and that was back on July 2nd. So it's really our idea for what a single-engine jet. This is, I think, going to be a really exciting market segment. In many ways, I think this could be the ultimate personal aircraft. It's a four-place airplane. So we'll think of it more along the lines of a Bonanza or a Mooney or even a 182, but it goes a heck of a lot faster and a heck of a lot higher.
Yeah, I'm noticing the cruise speeds here. I see a couple of different numbers. One of 250 knots is what it has flown at, but it can go up to 345.
Well, this airplane, this particular airplane, is not a pressurized airplane.
Okay.
Because it really was just a proof of concept for some aerodynamic purposes. And frankly, it's as much a marketing program as it is a development program, because we haven't committed, our board has not authorized us to go forward and develop this airplane. So we're here at AirVenture and out on the web, and we'll be going to a couple of the other shows this year. And we're really looking for market feedback. As I said, this is a brand new market segment. And so we're very interested in what it is that people really want. A lot of different people have a lot of different take on this. The Diamond aircraft, the D-Jet, Cirrus' Jet, and several others are all very, very different, which is, you know, frankly, is very cool, because that just means there's a lot of really smart people offering some really different products into the market segment. So we decided to take a slightly different approach, which is to put this concept aircraft together, show people. We've got a great interior mock-up that we've built, and get some feedback and let people talk to us and say, boy, that's the dumbest thing we've ever seen, or boy, that's, I've got to cancel my order for everything else and I want that airplane.
Right.
It's a different approach than this industry is typically used to, but we think it's an approach that's served the auto industry very well over the decades, and so we're trying that approach.
Definitely let you know what people want and what direction to start moving in.
Precisely.
So
before you go and make the big investment to go build an airplane, it's kind of nice to know that, especially in a whole new segment where, again, you don't have something to guide you by, that it's the right direction.
Well, is the target audience personal ownership?
Very much so. Very, very much so. You know, we've got, excuse me, in round numbers, we've got something in the vicinity of about 50,000 plus airplanes out there today that, for the most part, are 30 years old or older, and they're obviously just getting older all the time, and they're getting more and more expensive to maintain, both because the manufacturers who built a lot of the original parts aren't around anymore, and because the volume is low and just everything's combining. And so we find a huge, huge sort of pent-up demand for something better. Just going out and buying yet another, you know, same airplane that's been in production for 40, 50, 60, 70 years doesn't really, you know, move a lot of people. They already got an airplane, and they can paint it, they can put a new interior in it, put new garments in it, and have a pretty nice airplane. So we think there's a huge, huge, huge pent-up demand for this, and it really is the owner-operators or the individual owners, and in some ways, this is kind of the, about the ultimate airplane. I flew it down from Central Wisconsin Airport, where we had staged it on Thursday last week, and excuse me, on Friday last week, and I'm bopping along at 7,500 feet, just like I was in a Mooney or a Bonanza, and but I'm trying 250 knots and burning about a little less than 40 gallons an hour, and saying, this isn't such a bad way to travel.
No.
This isn't such a bad way to come to Oshkosh.
Especially with the airlines these days and the hassles of going through travel of the commercial airline. And a lot of people ask me, are you flying yourself? Well, you know, no, because I come from California, and in a 172, that's just not a very efficient
way to go. Those Rockies kind of get in the way.
But at the same time, yes, it's a hassle to go through the security clearances these days. You got to remove all your liquid contraband now.
You have to moo on command.
You know, it's
It's the airline's way of saying, hello, you're our customer. Let's treat you as a suspect.
Yeah, exactly.
So moving toward your own personal transportation that's got a comparable performance is very attractive these days.
I'm going to assume that another major design goal is to make this thing easy and simple for me, Joe Average, to operate.
Yeah, and how does training work
Absolutely.
With that?
Well, of course, we've really pioneered a whole lot of different changes in training for the Eclipse 500, and it ranges all the way from we're one of the only companies, in fact, I think we are the only company that actually puts you through sort of a pre-type rating, we call it a flight skills assessment, and it helps us assess where you are as a pilot, and in particular where your weaknesses are, what we can do to help you improve those weaknesses, or what you need to do to improve those weaknesses. Then we go
into... And that's standard with your purchase.
That's standard with the purchase of the 500. Then we go into what we call an unusual situations or emergency situations, including we... put you in an L-39 for a couple of flights and teach you how to recover from an upset. And that's, I think, really important in these small jets, which are high performance, because, you know, the potential of getting stuck behind a large airliner and getting flipped on your back by wake turbulence, it's just a reality. And our goal is not to turn you into Sean Tucker or Patty Wagstaff. Our goal is to just give you the survival skills, which most pilots can develop very, very, very rapidly because it's not that hard.
Right.
They just don't get to do it very often.
Right.
And then we teach you how to recognize hypoxia with a reduced oxygen breathing device. And so we actually simulate putting you to 27,000 feet.
Something every pilot should do.
Absolutely. We've done an extensive analysis, and we have not been able to find a single instance of an explosive decompression in a corporate jet in the last 40 years. But on the other hand, we all know about the Payne Stewart accident.
Exactly.
And those kinds of accidents where there's a gradual onset of hypoxia.
Right.
And it's really incumbent upon the pilot in command to recognize
To know
that.
How to recognize it, absolutely.
And not just sort of nod off and go to sleep and never wake up.
Yeah, and it's...
But I would think in this day of...
It's different for every pilot, so you can't just say this is what you will anticipate because...
Precisely. And important, and even more importantly, it changes as you age.
Yes. Every 4 years, they say you should at least do some recurrent recognition.
And so that's part of our recurrency training on the 500.
Wonderful.
You get to redo this on a regular basis. Then you start to train on how to fly the 500. I'll tell you this, everybody who's flown it, the Eclipse 500 is just, everybody says it's the easiest airplane they've ever flown, because the big issue with piston aircraft is they're just a lot of work to fly.
Yeah.
And in a particularly a FADEC powered turbojet aircraft, it's just push them and go and pull them and stop.
Well, you've been listening to Vern Rayburn with Eclipse Aviation about the concept jet and the very light jet. And this is EAA Radio.